searching podcasts for The Daily Perspective. Okay, The Daily Perspective podcast coming up.
They say a man who represents himself has a fool for a client. Well, with God as my witness, I am that fool.
What is the one most important thing our society needs?
That would be harsher punishment for a parole violator, Stan. And world peace.
To infinity and beyond.
Hey, hey, hey. The weekend is almost here. Hi there, Mark Congleton here, your host for this hour of observation, insight, and absurdity I like to call the Daily Perspective Podcast. Good to have you along today, wherever and whenever you may be listening. If you're on Facebook Live this morning, hi, hey you. If you're listening to the podcast at some other time, thank you. Thank you very much for being there and for sharing the show with your friends. You are doing that, right? That's just a little bitty guilt trip. It's a Friday edition of the podcast, and the weekend is upon us. And I hope you have plans for a stellar weekend with loved ones. I hope you unplug, that you get your sanity into gear and regroup for next week, because that's what the weekend really is all about. Let's just take a little breather and be normal and enjoy a normal life and let the insane people just be insane. Now, I will say this, on Fridays, the insane people like to drop a lot of news that they hope you won't notice. So you do need to pay attention today. And while you're paying attention today, take note of the insanity and file it for Monday, okay? All right. And I'm going to do my best this morning to, depending on when you're listening, I'm going to do my best to deliver a little bit of that insanity before we unplug, okay? All right. So much stuff in the stack today. I got to be honest with you. There's 8 or 9 stories I'm just not going to get to. I really have so much material here. There's just stuff I will not get to. For example, Obama's Ukraine ambassador apparently lied under oath during an impeachment inquiry. I wish I could get to that. We may not have time. The whistleblower's name, they've been making a lot about the whistleblower and how you just can't out the whistleblower. How dare you? Gasp. Oh, my word. What are you doing?
How dare you?
Yeah, pretty much. But it turns out the Democrats released the whistleblower's name in a transcript. They posted it online. It's been out there for days. When they realized it, they ripped it down, but everybody's seen it. So all of those people who are clutching their pearls,
how dare you,
and insinuating that if you talk about this person, that you're somehow breaking the law, yeah, they're full of it. Let's see, what else is there? The whistleblower's attorney has issued a cease and desist order to the White House to stop talking about the whistleblower. Well, the bottom line is, this cat's not a whistleblower. He was an insider planted there by the Democrats. He's a leaker. He's not a whistleblower. There's a difference, and you need to know that. There was a Virginia Democrat who was elected in the Tuesday elections in Virginia, who actually had been previously jailed for sex with a teenager. That's how bad things are in Virginia. That's one you need to look up. If you haven't heard the story, go look that one up. It's pretty revealing. And finally, in the list of things I probably won't get to today, it's been revealed that there is a memo issued by Facebook that reveals a policy that Facebook has in place to remove any content that contains the name of the anti-Trump CIA whistleblower, Eric Ciaramella. So if you're posting something on Facebook and it contains the name Eric Ciaramella and the fact that this cat is the whistleblower, then it's possible that Facebook could remove that post because they have actual policy stating they will do that. How interesting is that? Oh, there's a bunch of stuff we'll talk about. We will talk about today. Another whistleblower, the one who leaked the Amy Robach video about Epstein and how ABC knew about this 3 years ago during the election. There's a story about that. Trump got fined by New York $2 million. And we'll see, we'll explore why. One of Adam Schiff's star witnesses has a very questionable source for his testimony, which I think is really funny. And there's more. And hopefully, if I can time things right, we'll wrap things up with some really good news for your weekend, because I got a story that's going to improve your view on the world a little bit. But first, before we go anywhere else, I've mentioned these two ladies, Mock and Daisy, who do this radio show. They call themselves the Chicks on the Right. And they every morning do a Facebook Live. It's about a 15-minute thing. It's at 7:45, 6:45 Central, roughly speaking. And if you follow them, you get a little pop-up message telling you, hey, we're live. And this morning was just a treat. It always is a treat. They do this Q&A on Fridays where people type in their questions and they answer them. And they were talking about their dogs today and how they're both dog lovers. And I actually typed a comment in, and they read it this morning. It was kind of cool. But the comment was with a dog, you're their best friend and the leader of their pack. With a cat, you're the staff. But they mentioned something that they had posted to YouTube yesterday, which was a clip from yesterday morning's show on their show about the standings according to a certain poll in the Democrat side of the race, and who is ahead, who is behind, and the like. And I went over to YouTube and I watched it and almost blew coffee out of my nose. And this is how it goes.
Good news for you, Bernie Sanders.
What are you going to bring me into this, Rob?
You've moved ahead of Joe Biden in Iowa.
I knew this would happen. Hey, horse shorts. You like that? You like that, horse shorts? She's so excited, Rob. Look at her face. Look at her face. She's full of joy.
She's so smiley.
You didn't like my joy.
I do today.
There's bad news for you, though, Bernie.
Shut up, Rob. Shut up.
You're now behind Pete Buttigieg.
Wait, what?
He likes me being behind him. Was that inappropriate?
No, it was the best thing you've ever said.
That was probably inappropriate. We probably should not.
No, you have to. No, don't ever make that go away.
Are you sure?
Yes. Yeah. I'm positive.
Yeah, that'll. We'll put that
has
on
to
a
live in infamy.
Yeah, that'll be on a promo soon.
Oh my God. Oh my God, I don't know if we should ever keep that. We should probably not keep that.
No, we should keep it forever.
Ever and
sure?
ever and
yes.
ever and ever.
Sure?
I'm
yes.
going to make it a drop.
Oh my God.
Every time excellent. We mention Buttigieg. All right, Senator.
Oh, good Lord.
Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, and former Vice President Joe Biden make up a top tier.
Need to know the spread.
I'll get to it.
Okay, I'm so excited.
For the Democratic nomination in Iowa, according to a new poll from Quinnipiac University, Warren in first at 20, Buttigieg in second at 19,
wow.
Sanders in third at 17.
Wow, this is crazy.
Biden in fourth at 15.
Wow, Biden is losing his, well, he doesn't know where he is. Never mind, he doesn't even care. Biden doesn't care. He has no idea where he is.
And there's some dude that's been writing us a lot, being like, Buttigieg is going to be the guy.
Yeah.
Just mark my words.
I don't think he'll be the nominee. I think Warren will still be the nominee, but I think Buttigieg will be a close second. I really do. This is super interesting, though. And listen, Kamala is ticked off right now.
She's
ticked off. Because what is she going to blame it on? She can't blame it on, you know, what's she going to say?
That people aren't ready for a black woman. That's all she's got.
But they're ready for a gay guy. They're ready.
Wait, he's gay?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. These two ladies are best friends. They have a lot of fun, as you can tell, doing the show along with their producer Rob, and they give me a grin every morning, and I just appreciate them, and I really do. And the whole Bernie Sanders thing, Daisy does this really bad impression of Bernie Sanders. And she refers to Mock as horse shorts, because at one point in the past they had publicity pictures made. It was during the heat of summer. Mock was wearing shorts, as a lot of ladies do when it's hot in the summertime, and they're kind of cheek to cheek and smiling real big, and the picture is large enough that it shows everything they're wearing, and they had ladies comment online, "Wow, do you really think you're setting an example for conservative women showing all that skin?" And so from that point on, she referred to her as whore shorts because she wore shorts like a whore. But it's just, their interaction is just priceless. And I had to share that with you because it made me laugh so hard I cried this morning. Oh, my gosh. Well, anyway, let's move on to the news at hand. We got a few minutes before the first break here. Jeff Sessions has actually finally made his official announcement that he is running for his old Senate seat. For the last couple of months, speculation's been rampant about the possibility of Sessions entering the Republican primary of the 2020 election for the Senate seat he once held. And yesterday, less than 24 hours before the qualifying deadline, Sessions made it official with an announcement on Fox News Channel's Tucker Carlson Tonight and putting his campaign website online, which features a video explaining his intentions. With that, Sessions joins an already crowded field, which includes former Auburn head football coach Tommy Tuberville, U.S. Representative Bradley Byrne, Secretary of State John Merrill, former Alabama Supreme Court Chief Justice Roy Moore, and State Representative Arnold Mooney. Despite a very public falling out with President Donald Trump after his tenure heading the Department of Justice, Sessions pledged that he was still loyal to Trump during his appearance on Fox News, saying, "I would like to be able to go to the people of Alabama and tell them with all honesty, I believe in this agenda. I was for this agenda before President Trump announced, and I supported it when he was president, when he was running for president. I supported him. And if I return to the Senate, no senator in the Senate will be more for advancing Trump's agenda than I would be." Shortly before his Fox News appearance, Sessions' campaign site went online, which included a video of Sessions maintaining he was still loyal to Trump and Trump's causes, saying, quote, "When I left President Trump's cabinet, did I write a tell-all book? No. Did I go to CNN and attack the president? No. Have I said a cross word about President Trump? No. And I'll tell you why. First, that would be dishonorable. I was there to serve his agenda, not mine. Second, the president is doing a great job for America and Alabama, and he has my strong support. As everyone knows, President Trump and I have had our ups and downs, but here's the important part. The president is doing great work for America." Republican voters will have an opportunity to choose from Sessions and his competitors on March 3rd of next year to determine who will face the likely Democratic Party nominee, incumbent Senator Doug Jones. Jones reacted to the announcement with a statement provided to Yellowhammer News, which is where this is coming from, suggesting a focus on his opponents and Trump. Quote, "Since Jeff is not running against me at this point, it would seem that folks need to be focused on the reactions of his opponents in the Republican primary and perhaps President Trump's tweets about him over the last couple of years." Well, of course, that's going to be Jones's position. And this is an interesting development for the state of Alabama. And for those of you who don't live in the state of Alabama, I realize this seems like it's a local story, but I have a thought that makes it not a local story. First off, he announced on national television, on the highest ranked evening news show on cable. Actually, I think it's the highest rated evening cable show, period. The Tucker Carlson Show on the Fox News Channel. He made his announcement that he was running for the Senate for the state of Alabama on a national program. Now, I'm just thinking out loud here. But shouldn't he have made his announcement from somewhere in the state of Alabama at an event showcasing the announcement? That's the state he seeks to represent. Don't you think he should have made his announcement there instead of the national stage? Doesn't making the announcement on the stage of national television tell us he's actually a D.C. swamp dweller rather than a representative of the people of Alabama? I got to be honest. That's what it says to me. And I hate to say that. I do. But in all honesty, the fact that he made his announcement on national television illustrates everything wrong with our current process. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective. This hour of observation, excuse me, insight and absurdity. The Friday edition. Mark Congleton, your sometimes humble host here, driving the crazy bus and hoping you have plans for a terrific weekend. Back to Jeff Sessions. There may be those who disagree, but here's the root of the problem. This is what I hinted at before the break, and that is that we have a system in place, thanks to constitutional amendments, which allow our state senators to run for office on the national stage. Rather than actually touching base with and feeling the pulse of the people of your state, if you're running for a senator, you can campaign all over the place. You can go speak in L.A. and New York, and you can court money from high-paying people all over the country. And if you're a liberal, that's very handy for you, because in the dense population centers of New York and Los Angeles, there's a lot of liberal money. A lot. As we discussed the other day, Kamala Harris is campaigning for Democrat Doug Jones. She's fundraising for Doug Jones. 88% of Doug Jones's money in Alabama is coming from elsewhere. Actually, it's coming from California. So that means that a candidate for Senate campaigning on the national level is campaigning for cash, not for the interests of his people back home. And sadly, that puts all candidates in the same boat. They all have to compete, so they all have to campaign at the same level. Because all of that money coming from other places has to be countered somehow. And so, good people who really do care about representing their states and the people of their states and the interests of the people of their states have to divide their attention and their time and court people from other states for campaign contributions in order to compete. This was all caused by the 17th Amendment to the Constitution, which has been interpreted to allow senators to run this way, to be elected by popular vote rather than being appointed by their state. The state legislature, before this, actually appointed senators and congressional representatives. And that actually is a much better way for this to work. Much better. Because it puts you and I much closer to the person in office in D.C., because we can make a phone call or get in our car and drive to our state capital and talk with someone there about our displeasure with the performance of the person they sent to Washington, D.C. to represent our state. It's a lot harder for us to drive to Washington, D.C. to do that. And we wouldn't be taken seriously as voters because we don't represent the money, the deep pockets, the people they owe for donating to their cause. So Jeff Sessions making this announcement on national television just illustrates the problem that we face. And I also think the cause of most of our issues in this country. And that is the fact that our representatives and senators are beholden to their contributors and not to the people. You hear a lot of talk about money in politics. You hear the Democrats talking about corporate money, big money in politics. Well, that's all a distraction. It's just another lie. Because they have big money. They have deep pockets supporting them at every turn. Huge. Just look at Bloomberg. Bloomberg has filed to get on the presidential primary ballot. He did so in the state of Alabama. So he has filed to become a candidate on the Democrat ticket for president. So he's got tons and tons and tons of money. Lots and lots and lots of money. Lots of it. And he will tap other people with lots and lots of money. A lot of his money went to Virginia. A lot of money went to Virginia out of Bloomberg's coffers to defeat conservative Republicans there and to shut down the NRA's effort. He spent millions upon millions of dollars, many times more than the NRA had to spend in Virginia. And as a result, now Virginia is facing a situation. Gun owners in Virginia are probably going to have to face confiscation orders if they own any imaginary frightening rifles. So if you own an AR-15 and you live in the state of Virginia, get ready. Things are about to get real dicey for you because former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg poured tons of cash into your state. And people like him have poured tons of cash into campaigns for Democrats, for liberals. So they're lying to you when they say, when they're distracting you when they point to corporate money going to Republicans. They're just trying to dry up their campaign contributions is what they're trying to do. They're getting their campaign contributions. They just don't want the Republicans to get theirs. And that is an issue because they can run on the national level instead of just the state level. If they're running just in their states, then the people in their state actually make the decision. The money has to come from their state. Everything focuses on the state they are supposed to represent. If they're running on the national level, it's all about the money. Yeah, I'm cynical, but it's all about the money. Former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg, back to him, has expressed disappointment in the field of Democratic primary candidates, although previously ruled out a 2020 run for president. It looks like his hatred for Trump is going to prevail. He's beginning to take steps towards a campaign. The Associated Press has reported that Bloomberg did file to get on the ballot in Alabama's presidential primary. Alabama has an early filing deadline and is among the states that vote on Super Tuesday, named for a large number of state contests that day. Bloomberg advisor Howard Wolfson said yesterday that the former mayor is worried the current field of Democratic presidential candidates are not well positioned to defeat Trump. The AP reports that Bloomberg has long flirted with a presidential run but never launched a campaign for the 2020 elections, partly because of Biden's expected strength in the field. If his stock was in Biden, it's no surprise Bloomberg fears Trump can't be beat in February. Bloomberg said he was willing to spend $500 million to defeat Trump if he were to run. Alabama's deadline is today for candidates to enter the presidential race, and the billionaire has sent staffers to Alabama to gather the signatures necessary to qualify. Fox News reports that a recent poll found Bloomberg's chances for winning the White House are not promising, with 32% of respondents saying they would never vote for him, compared to just 6% who would definitely cast a ballot for the billionaire businessman. So another unpopular, although very wealthy, Democrat, leftist, progressive candidate has entered the race. This guy with deep pockets can fund his own campaign. He can buy a lot of ads. He can pay for a lot of lies on television and radio, print and electronic media. And this is another part of the problem. This is a rich leftist who's going to throw money at a campaign. Now, I'm not against money in campaigning. I'm really not. I'm against the hypocrisy. I'm against the wrongdoing. Because, frankly, when candidates like Bloomberg can enter the race just because they're super wealthy, and I know you can say the same thing about Donald Trump, but this is a guy who's going to throw a lot of money at a campaign because all of the Democrat candidates are losers. And he has no chance of winning. It's all about the cash. And it's kind of disconcerting. I don't like it at all. And I have a feeling you probably feel the same way. There were many, as I said, who said the same thing about Trump, that he was going to buy the election. Well, actually, no, he touched a nerve. He resonated with a lot of people. We saw the mainstream news media, the progressive press, try to hide what was actually happening and how Trump was actually tapping in to America at his rallies, because they didn't show us his crowds. They would show us certain angles of crowds at Hillary Clinton's campaign rallies that made it look like there were a lot of people there, and then they wouldn't show the crowds at the Trump rallies. And we started seeing pictures and videos taken on cell phones of the Trump rallies, and it became obvious. America loved Donald Trump, in spite of everything being told to us. And that was the difference. He clicked with America. Bloomberg can't. Welcome back to The Daily Perspective. It's the Friday show. Get the mind on the weekend. I know you do. Oh, man. I don't know if you... I'm not going to get into deep detail on this, but The View yesterday with Donald Trump Jr. Wow, was that a hoot. Wow. I encourage you today, since I'm not going to get into it, I just want to mention it here, you should look that up. Look up the video of Donald Jr. and his girlfriend there on The View promoting his book called Triggered. Boy, were the ladies the harpies of The View. The harpies on The View were all triggered. They were just incensed. At one point with Joy Behar telling the crowd, who was clapping for Donald Trump Jr. because he was making sense, she actually said, this is not a MAGA rally. And she shut the crowd down. They were so triggered. They were making accusations. It was Meghan McCain, you know, asking what it's like to have a family that hurts people. I would have said, in what way? How have we hurt anybody? Joy Behar brought up the old Access Hollywood tapes, you know, and I keep wondering why people when people like Donald Trump Jr., when they bring that up, why they just don't say, well, he wasn't talking about everybody. He was talking about groupies who throw themselves at celebrities. I mean, because that's what he was talking about. Because that behavior, those women who chase celebrity, whether they be politicians or rock stars or TV stars or whatever, they're out there and they do it. And it happens every day. And that's what he was talking about. Anyway, and what else was there? Oh, yeah, the blackface comment. Donald Jr. just finally looked at her and said, you know, we've all made decisions in the past that we regret. And, I mean, you wore blackface. And everybody's, oh, that's not true. And, yeah, she did. She was 29. She dressed as a, what she's called a beautiful African woman. And she had the hair blown out and had makeup darker. And so she looked African American. And the pictures are on the web. You can go search them today. They're out there. She did it. She denied it on the show, but she did it. They also talked about the View Harpies recommending impeachment the day after the election, 2016. And they all said, that never happened. Well, the internet is forever. And yes, it did happen. The video is out there where Whoopi Goldberg actually said there are remedies for this. You know, you can throw his bleep out. There's a thing called impeachment. So they did recommend undermining the decision of the American people on The View. And there was more content. It was a very contentious segment or segments on The View. But the interesting thing I thought was that the crowd was behind Donald Trump Jr. so much. They were in his corner so much that Joy Behar got angry and shut them down. Very interesting. Very interesting. Something else is interesting. Adam Schiff has a star witness. Ambassador Taylor, William Taylor. He's considered to be one of the bombshell witnesses to appear in Representative Adam Schiff's kangaroo court thus far. And his closed-door testimony is now out. The New York Times headline was a pretty good synopsis of what the media takeaway from it all was. Quote, top Ukraine diplomat testified Giuliani spearheaded pressure for investigations. Well, that was the leftist take. In the testimony before the House Intelligence Committee, Taylor identified Rudolph W. Giuliani, President Trump's personal lawyer, as the instigator behind the drive to get Ukraine's president to announce investigations into Mr. Trump's political rivals, telling impeachment investigators last month that Mr. Giuliani was acting on behalf of the president. That comes from the Times. Taylor's testimony, along with that of others, quote, portrayed a president determined to enlist Ukraine in publicly undermining his political rivals, including former Vice President Joseph R. Biden Jr. Just as an aside, we're seeing now that Joe Biden's doing an excellent job of undermining himself. Okay, back to the story. And where did Taylor get the idea that the Trump attorney Rudy Giuliani, wanted dirt from the Ukrainians on former Vice President Joe Biden and on a theory, admittedly questionable, that hacking during the 2016 election originated from Ukraine and not from Russia? According to Taylor's testimony, it came from the New York Times. That part, for reasons unbeknownst, didn't make it to the Times story. The revelation came during a line of questioning from New York Republican Representative Lee Zeldin, according to an excerpt of Taylor's testimony. Zeldin published in a Twitter post Wednesday. Zeldin focused on interest in Burisma Holdings, the Ukraine energy company that paid Biden's son, Hunter, $50,000 a month to serve on his board. Actually, it was probably $83,000. But I digress. Would you like to tell us what your position is on it? Zeldin asked Taylor. What was the goal of requesting investigations into 2016 election and Burisma? He responds, as I understand it from one of the article in the New York Times about Mr. Giuliani's interest in Burisma, in that article he describes, and I think he quotes Giuliani at some length, that article indicates that Giuliani was interested in getting some information on Vice President Biden that would be useful to Mr. Giuliani's client, Taylor responded. I think that's what he says. He says he's got one client and he's useful to the client. Zeldin says, and then it's your inference that Mr. Giuliani's goal would be the president's goal. Taylor responds, yes. And your source is the New York Times? Taylor answers affirmatively. So do you have any other source that the president's goal in making this request was anything other than the New York Times? Taylor responds, I have not talked to the president. I have no other information from what the president was thinking. Well, This wasn't the only issue Zeldin highlighted from Taylor's testimony, mind you. He also tweeted that he got Taylor to admit, quote, that his only substantive claim from his opening statement referencing Biden not only isn't firsthand, it's not even secondhand. The issue had to do with a phone conversation between U.S. Ambassador to the European Union, Gordon Sondland, and President Donald Trump. Zeldin said, this is the only reference in your opening statement to Biden other than your one referencing to the July 25th call. And this isn't firsthand. It's not secondhand. It's not thirdhand. But if I understand this correctly, you're telling us that Tim Morrison told you that Ambassador Sondland told him that the president told Ambassador Sondland that Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky would have to open an investigation into Biden. Taylor's answer? That's correct. Taylor's testimony has to be considered in toto, but it's not particularly promising for Trump opponents that Taylor's most substantive bit of testimony was apparently hearsay, and his information about Giuliani's attempts to investigate Burisma simply to get dirt on Joe Biden were derived from an article in the New York Times. And on the last count, it certainly doesn't get a whole lot more incestuous than that. There's a whole world of difference between the president investigating Ukrainian corruption because his administration was concerned about Ukrainian corruption and investigating it because he wanted to inflict damage on Joe Biden's campaign. Taylor's testimony was supposed to show this by laying out the rather smelly difference, the influence Rudy Giuliani had when it came to dealing with Kiev and a potential Burisma investigation. What it proved instead was that he got a lot of information on this matter from the New York Times. Taylor, who served as ambassador to Ukraine from 2006 to 2009 and is now the acting ambassador for the U.S. Embassy in Kiev, is one of the witnesses scheduled to testify publicly when hearings begin next week. Oh, that should be interesting. And you can assume this little bit of testimony is going to get a whole lot more attention from Republicans than it did from the media when the Taylor transcripts were released. Maybe between now and then, the New York Times can churn out another story Taylor can use to counter this line of questioning. After all, if this is where he gets significant chunks of his views on Ukraine from, well, surely they can do him a public service and save him from embarrassment twice. Oh, my word. So, one of the star witnesses got a big chunk of what he had to say from an article in the New York Times. And so, but somebody told so-and-so that somebody said this to so-and-so, and they told so-and-so this and that. This goes back to what I've said about it sounding like high school hijinks. Remember, I've said before that all of this stuff makes me think of kids, little kids. Oh, yeah? Well, he said this, and he told me you told this person, and they said this to them, and this is what this is all reminding me of. Only it's grown-ups in suits and ties with lawyers. And this is what the Democrats are putting up. This is all they have, and it's nothing. The Democrats have nothing. They're trying to weave this fabric of deceit and political, all of this idiocy, they're trying to weave it out of absolutely nothing, because that's all they have. They're lying. The press is complicit. The people are being deceived. Except for people like you, who are smart enough to look beyond their lies and find the truth.
Can't touch this. You can't touch this.
How dare
can't
you?
Touch this.
Welcome back to the Daily Perspective. Oh my gosh. I'm scanning through my stories here. Just a real quick hit on this. The video released by Project Veritas on Tuesday the clip of the then ABC News anchor Amy Robach complaining that the network prevented her from breaking news about Jeffrey Epstein 3 years ago. We're all aware of that by now. ABC News figured out who leaked it, who leaked the video. That employee, oh, by the way, though, how they do that, just in case you were curious, is that's the IT department's purview. There are records of who accesses computers because everything's digital nowadays. So you know who has accessed video files. So they traced that down. They found out who it was. This took them about less than 2 days. They figured out who it was. They found out where this person was because they weren't at ABC anymore. And they notified their current employer, CBS. And CBS fired this person, this leaker, this whistleblower. And I think it's very, very interesting that all of these people are all up in arms about releasing the identity of the whistleblower. They're grasping their pearls. They're clutching their pearls and gasping.
How dare you?
Yes, how dare you release the name of a whistleblower? But then CBS cooperates with ABC and fires a whistleblower. I'll be honest with you. I hope it's a female employee. I hope she lawyers up. And I hope she also hires some security. I hope she identifies herself publicly and lets people know who she is. Because, interestingly enough, people who tend to rub the Clintons the wrong way, and that's what this is all about, curiously end up committing suicide. So before she commits suicide, she needs to let everybody know who she is, hire lawyers, and employ security. I'm just saying. Hey, did you know that the Democrats have tried to impeach almost every elected GOP president since Eisenhower? They did. They have. Now, you know about Snopes. Well, they're fake. They're far left. They're supposed to be a fact-checking site, but they're very left-leaning. They accidentally confirmed that Democrats have sought to impeach every elected Republican president since Dwight D. Eisenhower. Naturally, while confirming this, the garbage fire of fake news that is Snopes rated what is mostly true as mostly false. The claim is, have Democrats tried to impeach every GO president since Ike? Snopes decided to fact-check this claim based on a popular meme that shows a black-and-white photo of General Eisenhower above a caption that reads, "Interesting fact, did you know Democrats have tried to impeach every Republican president since Eisenhower?" Looking to debunk this mostly true claim, Snopes accidentally confirms that Democrats have indeed tried to impeach every elected Republican president since Eisenhower. The U.S. has had 6 Republican presidents since Eisenhower left office in 1961. Nixon, Ford, Reagan, Bush Sr., Bush Jr., Donald Trump. The claim is wrong on its face because Democrats made no effort to impeach Ford, while a handful of Democratic lawmakers have introduced articles of impeachment against 5 of the last 6 Republican presidents. In most cases, these efforts weren't taken seriously by the party at large. Nixon and Trump have been the only Republican presidents since Ike who have faced a serious threat of impeachment. So Snopes has indeed confirmed that Democrats have introduced articles of impeachment against 5 of the last 6 Republican presidents, the sole exception being Gerald Ford, who was not elected. Ford was not even elected to the vice presidency. He was appointed by Nixon after his original vice president, Spiro Agnew, resigned in disgrace over a matter that had nothing to do with Watergate. What's more, Ford was president for only a little more than 2 years. But there you have it. Confirmation from a left-wing fact-check site that Democrats sought to impeach 5 of the last 6 Republican presidents and sought to impeach every Republican elected to the presidency since Eisenhower. Granted, the meme that claims Democrats tried to impeach every president since Ike is not 100% accurate, but after Snopes confirmed the meme was 5/6 correct, why is a mostly accurate claim hit with a verdict of mostly false? I think we all know the answer to that one. Because it is a damning fact that proves just how anti-democratic the Democrats are. What a bunch of sore losers they are. And Snopes is not a real fact-checking site. It is a palace guard for the political left. So Snopes splits hairs between what it describes as serious impeachment efforts and efforts that never went beyond a lawmaker introducing articles of impeachment. So what we have here is Snopes making a subjective opinion about what tried to impeach every elected Republican president since Eisenhower means. And wouldn't you know it, Snopes' subjective opinion falls right into the category of aiding and abetting the left. But by any objective pro-science standard, the meme in question is mostly true. Regardless, we should at least thank Snopes for doing the hard work that proves for a fact the following. Democrats have tried to impeach every elected GOP president since Eisenhower. So a tip of the hat, and thanks to the idiots at Snopes for actually getting something right for a change. And before we dive into the weekend, a little bit of good news for you. Imagine ordering dinner at your favorite restaurant. You know what you want without hesitation. A perfectly marbled 8-ounce steak cooked just the way you like it. Just before you order, your date tells you they've read that cows cause climate change and that meat might be unhealthy. Suddenly, the Caesar salad seems like a better option. We've all been steak shamed before. Ever since Senator George McGovern's 1977 dietary goals reported that red meat was a health villain, Americans have been chided about eating red meat. According to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, red meat consumption has fallen more than 24% since 1976. During that time, study after study has attempted to tie red meat to a laundry list of health problems. Until now, three studies published recently in the Annals of Internal Medicine did something very few papers do. Ask whether the previous studies had any meat on their bones. The researchers who wrote the report analyzed 61 past studies consisting of over 4 million participants to see whether red meat affected the risk of developing heart disease or cancer. All three came to the same conclusion. Decreasing red meat consumption had little to no effect on reducing risk of heart disease, cancer, or stroke. How can so many studies be wrong? Nutritional research often relies on survey-based observational studies. These track groups of people and the food they eat or try to tie a person's past eating habits to a person's current state of health. The result is something akin to a crime chart from a mob movie with a random red string connecting the random suspects trying to figure out who done it. Observational studies rely on participants to recall past meals, yada, yada, yada. The bottom line is it ain't so true. In fact, beef may be healthier than beef substitutes. Yeah, the room for error in all of this is very big. A much better form of study would be to lock people in cells for a period of time so you could precisely control what they eat and then measure outcomes. Excuse me. Obviously, there are ethical issues with such a structure, but that's why observational studies are more common, even though they're flawed. Now, you may be familiar with the Impossible Burger. You know, Burger King's been advertising this Impossible Burger for a while now. Oh, by the way, the good news? Go ahead and have a steak. You're in good shape. Go ahead. Grill it up this weekend or go to your favorite steak place and enjoy a good one. Just do it. That's the good news. Science is on your side. Don't let vegetarian environmentalists shame you on meat. I tried the Impossible Burger yesterday at Burger King. My verdict is it's no worse than anything else I've had from Burger King. But if I were to sit an Impossible Burger side by side with a burger from, say, Five Guys or Whataburger or In-N-Out Burger, I wouldn't take a second bite of the Impossible Burger because there are much better burgers out there. And I encourage you to go get one or have a steak this weekend. Enjoy your weekend. We'll see you back here Monday. God bless. Bye-bye.
We'll knock off now and take the next 2 days off. How's that?